Welcome to Fact Checking Darwin, the intellectual safe zone where scientific dishonesty is not tolerated. So today I thought I'd talk about a conversation I had with a chairman of a philosophy department at a local university. In my naivete, I thought it'd be a great idea to see what a philosopher has to say about all of the logical fallacies that are rampant in New Darwinism literature. Thought maybe I could get some help with terms I've been using, which I think I understand well, but who knows, maybe I need a professional to tell me. Much circular reasoning. There's a lot of argument from authority. There's even argument from ignorance. Many logical fallacies that I've run across. So I wrote this letter essentially saying just that to this philosophy chairman, thinking if he was interested, great. If there was someone in his department, maybe a graduate student, that'd be great. And I got back a letter, which actually is probably going to be the basis for a whole lot more podcasts. And I won't mention his name, but I'll read the letter and make some comments as it go along. He says, "Hello, Dr. Breitemeyer. Darwinian evolution biology today is called Neo-Darwinism, or synthetic theory of evolution. That is basically Darwin plus genetics. It is a theory accepted by 90% of biologists today. It has none of the errors that you cite. You seem to be just throwing these out." Well, right off the bat, I see, this guy is a huge defender of Darwinism. And for some reason, I think he got his feelings hurt with my questioning. In fact, I responded to him and said, "Well, the mere fact that you say it's accepted by 90% of biologists, that's an argument from authority. To state that there are no errors that I cite means he must have read everything I read and interpreted it completely differently, and that he knows all of the literature on Darwinism and can make this big, grand statement." Anyway, he goes on to say, "When a biologist examines an organism, he, she sees the features of that organism as adaptations to its natural environment. At the general level, then, there is predictability that its anatomy, physiology can always be understood as having survival value. Or if the environment is changing rapidly, as in the case of human biodestruction," ooh, that sounds scary, "diminish survival value. Under what conditions would evolutionary biology be falsifiable?" Well, right off, he's confusing adaptations with evolution. As far as I know, adaptations are characteristics of the design of DNA. Adaptations do not require mutations. Evolution requires mutations of nucleotides. So neo-Darwinists love to use these terms interchangeably. Natural selection and adaptations are not evolution. If there is a mutation, that cannot be an adaptation. But they like to think that we're not going to notice that. As an example, he states, "A step in the direction toward falsifiability would be if a species has features which cannot be understood as adaptations to an existing or previously existing environment. The latter includes vestigial remains, as in the coccyx." Wait a minute. I'm pretty sure we use our coccyx. There are muscles that are attached. It's not just hanging there, being totally uninvolved. So that's a rather bad example. But he goes on, and now we get to see what he really thinks. "Contemporary evolutionary biology has no serious rivals." Yeah, that's true, because evolutionary biology is a rather naive reach in itself. "It is supported by ecology, genetics, the fossil record, even chemistry and physics." Well, actually, it's not supported by the fossil records. That's why Stephen Jay Gould developed his theory Because he knew the fossil record didn't support what Darwin demanded of his theory. Anyway, and do we really need to get into ecology? How about, let's just leave it with genetics, chemistry, and physics. In any case, he goes on and says, it does two things. One, helps us better organize our thinking about the very complex world of living beings. And two, explains why plants and animals have the features they have. Well, that sounds to me like a worldview. It helps us organize our thinking. Is that what Isaac Newton said about his laws of motion? No, that's just a worldview. I don't need help with organizing my thoughts. And that is certainly not a scientific theory. And it doesn't explain why plants and animals have the features they have. Because evolution is mutation, and mutation is random. So if there's a mechanism, it's called random mutations. That's the explanation, not similarities. So he goes on, this is not to say that we do not have anything left to learn about the history of life on the planet. Oh, really? I bet he hates saying that. We need to clear up what is meant by species, for example. We are learning more and more about communication between members of species, and it is possible that plants have a rudimentary method of communication based on gases released at the root system and perhaps above ground. And to help me understand this brilliant thought, he says, Google tobacco plant and communication. Well, I think he needs to Google nucleotides and DNA. If there's communication, it's a designed system. Well, anyway, he likes to conclude, good luck in your exploration of evolutionary biology. So I sent him back a letter saying, no, I'm pretty sure there's some logical fallacies and that understanding evolution requires completely understanding DNA at the nucleotide level. And I mentioned that adaptations are not evolution. So he responded with, my 90% is not argument ad verecundiam, illicit authority. Oh, who said anything about illicit authority? So he thinks anything that challenges what he thinks is illicit. And this guy's a professor, not only a professor, but he's the chairman. Anyway, he says, it's something we use every day. Students take it on authority that professors are not spoofing them or making things up. Well, man, students have a problem if they believe that. Most people say the earth is not flat, etc. You should take a course in logic and not toss around fallacies. Yeah, I have had a course, and I do some reading, and I'm sorry that he's in denial. And why is he so hell-bent on protecting Darwinism as a theory? Well, what does this really mean to him? Anyway, he goes on, the origin of life is, of course, a complex matter. As an inquirer, you should look at rival theories. There are no rival theories, be honest. And in fact, the Darwinists are ignoring the only rival theory, which is to understand nucleotides. And then all you have to do is show me what nucleotide mutated from what to produce a new physiologic change. Anyway, I will not prolong this misery any further. But the big points that I take out of this, besides the fact that he is so defensive, saying that there is no such thing as literature that has any logical errors, and if I dare bring some up, then I'm just an ignoramus who can't understand his extremely complex topic. And frankly, none of us are. Biologists see life as adaptations to a changing environment. But there's a real problem with that. Adaptations are not mutations. In fact, they are probably designed within the DNA itself. I hate that I offended this professor, but I think I pretty much learned my lesson. There is no sense of asking anyone in the academic community to do any kind of logical review of Darwinism. It apparently is a religion to them. So I think what I'm going to do in my next podcast is to take the logical fallacies that I have come across in my readings and discuss those, present those, and we'll just leave the professor out of this because I don't want to hurt his feelings anymore. So join me next time when we discuss some real true-to-life logical fallacies. And remember, join us in the next podcast as we absolutely break down Darwin's theory.